Okay, so I don't have any actual results to show you about Higgs to gamma gamma and new physics, but I thought it was interesting to show you some of the things that we're working on. So first, a confession. I have to admit, I initially wasn't very interested in Higgs physics at the LHC. Well, we'll get to that. So, I figured we would find it where it was expected in the standard model. Electroweak precision told us it had to be light. It was above the left bound. I figured it would have the standard model branching ratios with standard model production rates. The analyses are relatively straightforward. I'm interested in new physics beyond the standard model. So why study Higgs? Well, I was also bitter that we didn't get it the Tevatron while I was Higgs convener. So maybe there are psychological issues. Yeah, that's just a joke. So what changed? Well, this definitely got me interested. As you've seen several times at this workshop, the Higgs to gamma gamma branching ratio, especially from ATLAS, but still a bit at CMS, though we're waiting to see their latest results. As you know, it's 1.8 plus or minus 3 statistical compared to the standard model branching ratio. And then there's some systematics from experimental, and then systematics from the theory calculation, mainly the gluon fusion rate. But you see here, it's steady as a function of time. Even in our 2011 data, we were above 2. And then these are independent data sets. So then this is the new data that we collected at, this is the 2011 data. This is the new data that we collected at 8 TeV with an integrated luminosity of almost 5 in the reverse centrobarns. Right? And then the new data again was still high, with an integrated luminosity of 13 inverse centrobarns. So you see, it's steady in time, and the combined is still quite a bit high. The signal looks quite good. There's no funny shape to the signal. And it's high now both in the vector boson fusion and VH production modes, and also in the gluon fusion and TTH modes, about equally. And it's also high in pretty consistently among all the different detection channels. So we break the data up into events that are, you can't read all these, but it's things like, are the photons both in the central region with high PT, or are they in the forward region? Are some of the photons converted? These are things with high mass dijets, low mass dijets. So this would be like BVF. This would be your VH with V going to jets. This is if there's also a lepton in the event. So it's not just that one channel is funny and we're doing something wrong. It seems to be consistent across all the different channels as a function of time. So it looks quite stable. And we'll see what the next 8 inverse centrobarns has to say. OK, so the second thing that got me really interested in this, and this has always interested me, I worked on this even as a grad student, was that we always knew that we could have a large branching ratio, say, of the chi-2 to the chi-1 Higgs, and this can be almost 100%. And it was always fun to think that we could discover the Higgs in SUSY production. And so this plot was from the ATLAS TDR, May 1999. This was Squirt-Gluino production at 14 TeV with a Higgs mass of 95 GeV. That wasn't ruled out at the time. So you just put in some simple cuts, require some jets, 2B jets, some delta R between the 2B jets, look at the invariant mass of the B jets, and cut at missing ET greater than 300 GeV. And you would get out a nice peak like this, and you would pretty easily discover the Higgs boson that way. Yeah, there's some Z in here, but the Higgs is 95 here, so it's kind of just overlapped. But the Z would be, maybe down here. Sorry? Right, with a Higgs mass of 125, it would be over here. Yeah, in this model, it's almost 100% this branching ratio. You still have standard model Z plus Higgs background, you know, and SUSY. Yeah. Sure. My point here is just that you can have SUSY models that would give you quite striking Higgs peaks. You can have a lot of Higgs and SUSY events. That's my point here. Unfortunately, it didn't quite turn out this way. We don't see this in the data, although I have to say I haven't seen this analysis actually done. But I think we've looked. Somebody would have said something, probably. However, the corollary is still true. There's still a connection between Higgs and SUSY. And so maybe you could discover SUSY using Higgs decays, now that we know where the Higgs is. And I think it's still possible that about 10% or even more of all Higgs production could be through SUSY production and decay. You could easily have SUSY production of a picobar or more. So most of this is coming from squarks, which are about 700, where is it? 900. So there's squarks and gluinos around the TV. And then those are decaying to neutralino 2, and neutralino 2 is decaying nearly 100% to neutralino 1. So you get a lot of missing ET, you get jets, two B jets from the Higgs. Yeah. OK, so that's what got me interested. And so where are we now with the data taking? So we now have results for Higgs to gamma-gamma from either 13, if you're Atlas, or 5 from CMS, plus 5 in receptor barns from 2011 data. And combined, we're about 3 sigma high for the Higgs to gamma-gamma branching ratio. Looking forward to Morion, just in March 2013, we should expect to see 21 inverse femtobarns at 8 TeV from each experiment. So you could expect to see a 4 sigma high branching ratio by then. But then we've collected all the data. As you know, the LHC is now shut down. There will be some proton lead running next year, but no more PP until 2015. So a 2-year wait. However, as I'll stress a few times, there's plenty to do in the meantime. We can improve the standard analyses and then also study all these new channels I'm about to tell you about. So what are some of these new channels? Well, let's just remind ourselves about how the Higgs is produced. Clearly, we want to study Higgs to gamma-gamma as carefully as possible. And that means measuring these branching ratio as accurately as possible. And we also want to understand the rates in each of these production modes independently. So here are the different production modes, the gluon fusion inclusive. You have QQH, you know, vector boson fusion, and then associated productions. So either with a W or with a Z, these are down by about a factor of 100 after you include the branching ratio of the vector bosons to leptons. And then you have TTH down here. So we've looked at this, and we've looked at this with Higgs to gamma-gamma. But now I want to start talking about these. Just to remind you of the total cross-sections, you know, we are at the LHC here still, unfortunately. So we have this. It's more than 9 orders of magnitude for some things. It's 12 orders of magnitude difference in cross-section between signals and backgrounds. But it's still a nice cross-section, so we're getting about 1 WH event per minute before branching ratios at 10 to the 34, which is about where we're running now. And then Higgs decays. You know, it's, we forget, we can stop making this plot, right? We don't really need this axis MH anymore necessarily, but you know, you can just look at what they are here. So of course, mostly to B jets, some to W's, gamma gamma is all the way down here at 0.25%. Probably should still show it to a grad student at some point, but you know, I don't know what the top branching ratios are as a function of mass. Okay. I guess they wouldn't be that interesting. So for some of these new channels, let's think about what we would see. So you can start to see these, as I'll show you, given even the small cross section. So things like WH with Higgs to gamma gamma, that'll give you a lepton and missing ET from the W plus the gamma gamma. You can also look at hadronic decay modes, and we do that in the inclusive analysis already, but they're much dirtier, so I don't think you'll learn too much interesting from that. The TTH, you can get a lepton emissing ET plus B jets plus diphoton, or you could just look at missing ET plus BB and gamma gamma with hadronic decays of the top, lots of jets. And in the ZH, you have the two leptons from the Z or the missing ET from the Z and Higgs to gamma gamma. So first thing to note is that if the branching ratio of Higgs to gamma gamma is enhanced, then these channels would also be enhanced. So that would be a nice thing to check there. It's another handle. And it's important to measure these production channels independently, since in the inclusive analysis, we're measuring cross-section times branching ratio. We don't know necessarily, since it's hard to measure the inclusive rate, whether it's just more Higgs production in total or whether it's a larger Higgs to gamma-gamma branching ratio. I think most of us assume that it's much harder to play with the W and, or Z and even top coupling to the Higgs than it would be the gluon fusion production. So you're more directly measuring the Higgs to gamma gamma branching ratio. And then the really exciting thing to me is that you're also sensitive to new physics directly here. There's low standard model Higgs background in these channels. SUSY can produce these Higgs in decay chains, as we started to talk about. Also associated with leptons and or missing ET and or B jets. Lots of other models can also give you Higgs in new physics, and I'll go through some details of different models. So I do want to keep in mind to keep the selections as inclusive as possible. What worries me about these channels is that Atlas and CMS will try to measure standard model WH, TTH, and ZH as accurately as possible. And when you do that, you'll start to put cuts on the analyses that will optimize for those standard model channels but may reject new physics or not be optimal for new physics. Yeah. Special selections are needed, so we have a lepton plus. Maybe I don't understand the question.
So there's a sample of events from which one, where one starts to do this analysis, and then there's a
No, so the standard analyses are very inclusive. You're just looking for two photons. You don't really care about the angle between them or the PTs necessarily. You're just, looking for two photons and plotting the invariant mass, really. Well, so there are different subchannels then that will select dijets. So we have the low mass dijet and the high mass dijet VBF channel. But those are added into the analysis. So we're not vetoing any events really. It's in there. So the point here is to then look at that subset of events more carefully. Okay, so I said we want to keep the selections as inclusive as possible, but even more directly, what we want to do is have beyond the standard model benchmarks in these channels that we can use to optimize the selections for new physics. So while we were here, KITP, Jay, Jim, Scott, and myself got together at various times and came up with some benchmarks that are useful for these new physics channels. So we have those to work with now. So I'll go through some details of SUSY models, but you can still have order 100 femtobarn cross sections of just direct electroweak production. But you can also have stop production still, so even higher. Yeah, so you'll get another factor of 3. That's one possibility. So let's take a look at W plus Higgs to gamma gamma, where the W is decaying leptonically. First thing you note here is how incredibly clean it is. So the signal to background is now about 2 compared to 0.02 for the inclusive Higgs analysis. This is pretty shocking when you see it for the first time. So here's the inclusive Higgs analysis. This is, I'm trying to compare apples to apples here. So this is an old study from 14 TeV. And this is, the diphoton bump that basically what we're seeing now. But this is what you would see in the gamma-gamma plus lepton plus missing ET channel. You know, a very nice flat background and a very distinctive peak. Obviously, there's less statistics, though, in this channel. So what is the rate? So in 30 inverse femtobarns, which is about what we have now, the cross-section is about 1 picobarn for WH. You start multiplying this times lepton efficiencies, branching ratios times efficiencies, photon branching ratios times efficiencies, missing ET. You need to have missing ET above, say, 40 GeV, and then the efficiency to reconstruct that. So in the event, in the end, you have about 2.5 events of WH expected. The background, however, is only about 1.5 events. So that means if you did this analysis now and you believe the standard model, you should see 4 events on a background of 1.5. That's about 2 sigma sensitivity to a standard model WH production in this channel. I'll talk about the backgrounds. So that's my next slide. So the other thing is, you don't just know, we don't know that the branching ratio is enhanced by 1.8. We know that the cross-section times branching ratio seems to be enhanced by 1.8. So the branching ratio could even be 3 or 4. That's not even excluded. But I'll assume that the branching ratio could just be 2 times the standard model rate and that the cross-section for WH is standard model-like. I think that's not conservative, but more conservative. So that means that you'd see 7 events and expect 4 from standard model Higgs plus other backgrounds. That would be 1.5 sigma-ish evidence for a larger contribution to this channel from a high branching ratio, or new physics. It would be hard to disentangle new physics from a larger branching ratio at first. And then if you had additional non-standard model production on top of that, for instance, you had Chargino neutralino with decays to either gravitinos or Chargino neutralino to, like we were saying before, neutralino 2 to Higgs neutralino 1. These can have rates of up to a picobarn at 8 TeV, which is comparable to the standard model rate. So in that case, you would see 12 events and expect 1.5 from background, remember, but 4 including the standard model Higgs background. That would be 4 sigma evidence for a larger rate from beyond the standard model. So you can really start to be sensitive to things here in just the WH channel. So, and then you always want to remind yourself to keep your mind open. So it could be a more complicated signal than this. You could also have softer lepton. You could have less missing ET. You could have lower transverse mass from new physics signatures. For instance, if you start to have compressed spectra where this mass difference gets small, this is going to be off shell. So you really want to study this final state of lepton plus missing ET plus Higgs to gamma gamma as inclusively as possible and optimize for some of these benchmarks that we now have.
Andy?
Yeah. I don't know anything about that. So.
Well, I was just curious whether the rumor was.
No comment at this time. This is being recorded. So let's talk about how the analysis would work a little bit. So we'd have standard gamma-gamma selections as in the inclusive analysis. So again, this answers your question. These events are in the inclusive analysis. There's an asterisk here, and I'll talk about that in a second. And then you add a lepton and missing ET, basically. So either a tight electron with an acceptance, we can go down to about 15 GeV, or a tight muon with an acceptance, PT above 10 GeV. We have to have calorimeter and track isolation, which we now correct for pileup, and missing ET above about 40 GeV seems about where the background starts to fall off precipitously, which is not a lot of missing ET these days, and there's some details about how you have to calibrate and reconstruct that missing ET to correct for pileup and also to account for the fact that you have photons in the final state, which aren't jets. Those are technical complications. Then it's also very important to remove events where there's a dangerous background, which is Z gamma, where the Z is decaying to 2 electrons, and you have this extra ISR photon. If one of these electrons fakes a photon, you now have E gamma gamma, which is exactly like your final state you're looking for. So, and the electron to photon rate is not small. It's much larger than the jet to photon rate because you already have this beautiful electromagnetic shower. You just need to have some problems with tracking. So it's important to remove events where the mass of an electron and a photon is near the mass of the Z, because one of your photons was actually faked by the electron. So if you get that one, this is really the Z mass. So we also have some additional photon selections to reduce this electron to photon fake rate. We're actually a subset of the inclusive analysis in another way. And again, we're not cutting on the transverse mass of the lepton and the missing ET, which you would do in a standard model WH search to reduce fake lepton backgrounds. Okay, so this gets into what some of the backgrounds are. So first you blind the M-gamma-gamma region. We do all of our analyses blind. Still haven't looked in there. And we study the backgrounds to lepton and Mycenae plus gamma-gamma. So how do we do this and what are they? Well, first of all, there's irreducible W plus gamma-gamma. This we can simulate using MagGraph. Not too difficult. It's 0.37 femtobarns in the invariant mass range of interest for these rather small PT cuts. We then add extra selections. But this ends up being about 9 events after efficiencies. I mean, then after efficiencies, 2 events remaining. You then have to add on top the fact that you can have W plus jets where one of the jets fakes.
When you say 2 events, is that in a particular mass window? Is it that in the full 100 to 180 mass window? Or?
Yes. So you can also have jets faking photons, just as you do in the inclusive analysis. And here we can essentially reuse what was learned in the inclusive analysis about jet to photon fake rates and play the same games in this channel with the W. So we expect this ratio of about 16 to 5 to 1, where this is real photons. This is where you have one jet faking a photon. This is where both of your photons are faked by a jet. So in the end, a sum of these gives you about 1 event additional from jets faking photons. I'm just trying to give you rough numbers here and an understanding of where the events could come from. You then have the more dangerous background and the harder to understand ones, where essentially everything's fake. So you could have just a gamma-gamma with no real W involved, or fake photons and no real W involved. So here you need to essentially fake a lepton and fake missing ET. And here you have to do a data-driven method and perform some cross-checks in the sidebands to understand these missing ET fake rates, which are correlated with the lepton fake rates, to understand these backgrounds. So this is the hard part. But we expect about 6 events here, so it's actually the dominant background. However, add it all up, it's only about 2 events expected in the signal region of 120 to 130. So it's consistent with the earlier studies that were done in the many years ago of the sensitivity in this channel, you know, for instance, these plots that I showed you here. Yeah, there are some other small diboson backgrounds, but diboson on top and top is small compared to these. And those we can do from Monte Carlo. Okay, so that was WH. So how about TTH? Well, the baseline analysis here is similar to the WH analysis. It has a lepton, and it has missing ET, and it has a Higgs to diphoton resonance. Now you're just adding in a B-jet. You could also study the all-hadronic channel, and we are doing that, but it is it has more background. But as I'll mention, you could have new physics there and not in the lepton channel. But you could also do it the dilepton channel, but the expected rate is 9 times smaller. So how many events do we expect? Well, the TTH cross-section is after branching ratios to leptons, about 4 times smaller than WH. But you have 2 Ws involved, and you have higher PT and larger acceptance. It ends up being about 1.5 standard model TTH with H to gamma gamma events expected in 30 inverse femtobarns. So again, if you have extra enhancements, it could be more. The backgrounds here are even more difficult to calculate, since now in TT bar, you have two extra jets at least in every event. And those jets can fake photons or leptons. You have irreducible TT gamma-gamma background, which you can calculate again in MagGraph, but it's small. The more dominant backgrounds are things like TT gamma, with one jet faking a photon, or just TT bar with both jets faking the photons. Gamma gamma plus four jets. Hundreds. Yeah, so we do use that sample in order to check this jet to photon fake rate. But then after you acquire the B jet, you're down to many fewer events. Right. Yeah, that's essentially this channel, right? Yeah, the sample with just two photons and jets, of course, is not dominated by TT bar, so it's more complicated. That's essentially what we're doing. OK, so we have these backgrounds from TT bar and either real or fake photons. The challenge here is to reduce these backgrounds using tighter photon cuts to reduce this jet to photon fake rate. And we should be able to recover, with some work, a signal to background, again, of about two in this channel. So comparable to WH, but with about half as many events expected in the standard model. I wanted to add this slide. I think it's interesting that there's also other interesting ways and more complicated ways that you can, that's the next slide. This slide is not so interesting or complicated. This is just saying that you can have stop production or spottom production using relatively light stops or spottoms, you know, less than 500 GeV even, which would have a cross-section of about 80 femtobarns and could give final states like TT plus missing energy plus two Higgses. And so this is one of the benchmarks that we agreed to study here at KITP. And this would give about 1.5 events expected in the signal region, or larger, you know, if enhanced or if stop is lighter. And you could have other new physics in this TTH channel. For instance, if you drop the lepton requirement and just study the all hadronic events, you could have missing ET plus a B plus Higgs to gamma gamma. This is similar to all hadronic TTH, but the background could be reduced by raising the missing ET cut further to try and enhance some SUSY signature. And you could also have just B plus H with no missing ET or no leptons. I think I saw some paper about a vector-like quark model where the vector-like quark could decay to BH. So maybe you'd look for a bump in the BH invariant mass. And the backgrounds are moderate here. So to give you an idea of of the background level, we only have about 50 events in the signal region, expected in the signal region, sorry, for 30 inverse femtobarns, you know, with this kind of PT cut on the B. So it's not a huge background of B plus Higgs to gamma gamma. And I think more phenomenological studies would be nice here, and what are the best channels and selections for these kinds of signatures. Okay, now about di-Higgs production. So this is something I hadn't thought as much about before, but getting more interested in now that I've been here. So we know that double Higgs production is very small in the standard model, and it's very hard, therefore, to measure the Higgs coupling, the Higgs self-coupling. But you can turn this around and look at the bright side, that there's then very low di-Higgs background to new physics. It could be really strongly enhanced by a factor of 1,000 over the standard model rate. So it's a little strange that we haven't really decided the best way to look for this yet. I think one of the best ways is to look for Higgs to BB and Higgs to gamma gamma. But I can't prove that. You'd then also look for a bump in the invariant mass of the two Bs. So I think this could be studied. Backgrounds with two B jets are really not so large. They're obviously much smaller than the ones with one B jet. So only about 5 events expected in the M gamma gamma signal region for 30 inverse centobarns with even a lower PT cut on the Bs that you could use. So you can see we would already be quite sensitive here. Right. So as I said, I'm not sure what the best channel or selections are to try to see a signal of di-Higgs. There's a lot of other choices. So maybe you'd want the Higgs to decay to Ws and ask for some of the Ws to decay leptonically. That could give trilepton signatures. Could have Higgs to tau tau and Higgs to WW. This would be an interesting signature. You could do things with Higgs to ZZ and off-shell Z decays. So we now have agreed that a very simple benchmark model would be a heavy Higgs decaying to light Higgs with a heavy Higgs mass of 300 GeV and some two Higgs doublet model, which would give a cross-section of 3.6 picobarns at 8 TeV. Just to have some concrete model to optimize against to try to settle these questions of what the best way to just see that signal would be. And I think having a limit on just PP to HH would really constrain a lot of BSM models. We really don't know, and I think that's what we need to study. I think BB gamma gamma is should be near the top of the best way, but I'm not sure. Okay, so what about Z plus Higgs? This has the smallest signal. There is missing ET plus gamma gamma, which would be from the Z decaying to neutrinos. And for standard model Z Higgs signal, you'd want to require, say, missing ET greater than 80 GeV, as they do for this plot in this old study at 14 TeV. As you can see, it's almost as clean as WH was, with a similar signal to background of about 2. But the rate is about 2 times smaller, just one event expected in 30 inverse femtobarns. So could see 4, it's not quite as exciting. Of course, new physics could really come in there with the missing ET. Then there's also the dilepton plus gamma gamma channel, where the Z is decaying to 2 leptons. This is much, much cleaner than WH. But the rate is 6 times smaller, only 0.4 standard model events expected. So seeing an event here would be interesting, though, and seeing two would be actually pretty exciting. Now, you could, of course, have some new physics in the ZH channel, in the missing ET only channel. Of course, you could have some signals that give you lower missing ET but a larger rate. Or you could have other signals that give much larger missing ET but a smaller rate. So it's important to keep your mind open here. Some of us have thought about just studying the missing ET shape in Hasty gamma-gamma events and looking for excesses where you don't expect them. It's a difficult analysis, though, for reasons I won't go into at the moment. For the dileptron plus gamma-gamma, I think it's important to keep in mind that new physics could give off-shell Z decays. For instance, you have this process, or even like-sign leptons or opposite flavor leptons. So we don't necessarily want to just look for a quote-unquote on-shell Z. We really want to look at a generic dileptron signature plus Higgs to gamma-gamma. So here was the more complicated, more interesting way of having top-like signatures. I really like this model because it gives, it's not excluded, and it reminds you to look for more complicated things. So this is one of the PMSSM points with low fine-tuning from Joanne and Tom's studies. You know, here you have two stops, which are relatively light, 318 GeV, which are decaying through charging O2s, which that's not so important, but the neutralino here, that is important, because that's where you get the Higgs in this model. So you get the charging O2 decaying to the charging O1 with a 10% branching ratio to Higgs, but that could be made higher. And you also get off-shell Z decays here, or decays to a photon. And you get hard leptons from W decays with a big mass difference here. So the rates can be two events or so, but you could have a whole host of different signatures, maybe off-shell or on-shell Z decays, a third photon, a high PT lepton, soft leptons, larger missing ET. Maybe difficult to isolate that this is what's happening, but we should try to be as sensitive to that sort of scenario as possible. Okay, so if I have time, I think I have a few more minutes. I also want to show some analyses that we're working on, which are looking for Higgs final states with photons not predicted by the standard model. So for instance, Higgs to gamma-gamma plus photon, this also has a very small background in the standard model, just 0.1 events expected in 30 inverse Gunter Barnes. You can get an extra photon from SUSY, as you saw in the last slide. There's also BSM theories, like this exotic model where the Higgs is actually a WW bound state, where you get a large enhancement of this associated decay. So that could give 100 events in 30 inverse Gunter Barnes. And so far as I know, there's no study of looking for Higgs plus a photon. You could also have Higgs decaying to light pseudoscalars, or even not so light, with those decaying to photons. So we know that for the mass of the A less than 400 MeV, this has been studied, at least going down to about 100 MeV or so. But this range from 400 MeV up to half the mass of the Higgs could give you three or more isolated photons in a diagram like this. And as far as I know, there's been no analysis at the Tevatron or LHC for any final state with greater than three photons, with at least three photons. In fact, there wasn't even a trigger at Atlas for three photons until we realized this. So we did commission, towards the beginning of this year, a three photon trigger, which will have PTs of 15 GeV for the three photons. This is 50% more efficient for the signal I just showed you than Higgs decays, than having the standard diphoton trigger, which has PTs of 24 and 22 GeV, as used for the Higgs to diphoton analysis. So offline, you can require at least three tight isolated photons and look for excess rate of these events, and even look for invariant mass bumps in pairs of photons or in the four-photon invariant mass. Of course, you have to understand the backgrounds, and we're working on understanding these fake photon rates. Basically, you just have to worry about jets faking photons. So you can go through these studies. To give you a rough idea of the numbers, there's about 600 background events in 30 inverse femtobarns with three photons, and you could expect about one background event in 30 inverse femtobarns with four or more photons. In a large invariant mass range. And then just one more thing, interesting to think about here. If the mass of the lightest neutralino happens to be between half the Higgs mass and the Higgs mass, then the Higgs can't decay to the invisible channel of two neutralinos because it's kinematically forbidden. But it can decay to a gravitino, if that's light in the theory, plus a neutralino. And then the neutralino is decaying to photon and gravitino. So it's an interesting range of parameter space. And this could be maybe 10% of Higgs decays, not excluded. That would be 25,000 events of this in 30 inverse femtobarns, which you'd think you'd be able to see since you have one photon and missing ET. But it turns out a single photon and missing ET is has a lot of background. It's also difficult to trigger on. We're doing this analysis now using a photon plus missing ET trigger, which can go down to about 50 GeV of missing ET. The standard monophoton analysis from Atlas, I think CMS goes down to maybe 120, but the Atlas one starts at 150, and you can see here why, because the signal from things like a monojet or monophoton plus WIMP starts to be large out here at high missing ET, but it's swamped by backgrounds at lower missing ET. But if you have a resonance like the Higgs, which is decaying in this way in a particular kinematic range, then that signal could be preferentially at low PT. So we want to study this range at low PT and try to reduce these backgrounds from things like W to electron neutrino with electrons faking photons and see whether we can see some excess of monophoton plus missing ET from this. So we'll constrain this model. Okay, so to conclude, the Higgs to gamma-gamma, I think I've shown you, is a good channel for studying these interesting new associative productions of the Higgs boson. And there's low backgrounds, also low signal, but you have reasonable branching ratio, and it could even be larger than in the standard model. And there's no inherent missing ET in the Higgs to gamma-gamma decay, which is really nice when you start looking at these channels that have real missing ET in them, because then you can isolate the missing ET coming from here. If you're looking for W plus Higgs to WW, you don't know where the missing ET is coming from. So with 30 inverse centibarns, I think I've shown you that you can start to see, in the worst case, evidence for standard model production. And measure the couplings directly. Where's the joke here? The better case would be, you know, confirm this evidence for the enhanced branch ratio of Higgs to gamma gamma, and even better, you know, you could see multiple BSM effects. Yeah, well, I'm young. So, and then I've shown that it's also interesting to study these other non-standard model-like modes of di-Higgs, which is very interesting, or Higgs plus B, or Higgs plus gamma, or Higgs to four photons, Higgs to one photon, et cetera. So there's a lot of work to do here. And it would be great to see more studies of new physics in these kind of channels. I don't think we really know yet what the best decay channels to use are, or the selections for seeing new physics using Higgs decays to see new physics. So we've now made some progress. We have these KITP BSM Higgs points that we can start to use to optimize the searches for this. But a lot of open questions, like how to separate new physics from standard model associated Higgs backgrounds, and what new physics we can expect, what to put limits on, what is limited by these new measurements when they come out, and you know, how would you solve the inverse problem if you saw some new signal, et cetera. So I have one more slide, again, because I'm young and optimistic. So this comment came up a few times at this workshop that you know, we've seen nothing so far, and we have to wait another 3 years or more before having a discovery. So I think it's too soon to claim this, although it is likely going to be correct in the end. So as I've shown you, many analyses, well, I didn't show you, but it's true that many analyses have only been done with 5 inverse femto barns at 7 TeV. Many more have only been done with an additional 6 at 8 TeV. So we're talking about tripling the data set that's being used, plus improving the analyses. And many, many analyses have yet to be done at all. So all the ones that I showed you in this talk, including things which we're also working on, like the search for longest-lived gluinos, which we heard about several times this week and last week in the mini-split scenario, where you'd have gluinos which would be long enough to travel in the pixel detector and then decay to quite fantastic-looking long-lived jets in the tracking detector. So this hasn't been looked for at all. Many better searches for special SUSY points and compressed spectra and things like that. So it's important not to get too down on ourselves just yet. And there will be plenty of new results coming out during the shutdown in the next 2 years. And just to remind you, Babar is still releasing results. So there's lots of things to do. Thanks. Well, eventually it definitely will do better. There's much smaller systematics to that measurement. I don't know what I was just going to say, I don't know at what luminosity that crossover takes place. But it's probably not in the distant future. It's in the next run. So in the diphoton decay channel, of course, you'd need a very large boost before the photons started to overlap or anything. So it's very easy to reconstruct that final state. But if you're asking, do we then use the measured PT of the Higgs to discriminate against some standard model Higgs background, no, we haven't added that in yet. So we're trying to look inclusively for an excess first. But yeah, you certainly could do things like that. Ask for the missing ET to balance the PT of the Higgs or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so these are the kind of... Yeah, that Suzy Higgs study from 13 years ago used the delta R less than 2 cut between the B jets. So it is something you'd want to do if you started from a very high scale like Luino's. These are the kind of studies which would be great to have. So we don't usually do analyses that way, for some good reasons and some not so good reasons. But I think it is true that you can get into trouble. You would almost certainly find some bump somewhere, is the problem, and then the question is, what do you do? And it becomes a dangerous path. So. So, right. Yes. And so you can do that. And we do, we have looked in some ways at, in some non-blind ways at older 7TeV data, for instance, and look to see if things continue, and that happens internally, but I'm not sure I would advise my student to make a thesis out of it, but to some extent we do those sorts of wild things.
Let me ask one thing. The new KIT DSM benchmark course, is this something that might be useful to put on the wiki?
Sure. Not yet. It's distributed throughout the talk.
Alright. Well, maybe you prefer, you know, to use the wiki. Just make a new section, DSM benchmark points. And as far as I know, the wiki will live on. Maybe people who have been here can, look at it and, feed you some comments.
Yeah, some great. Ideas. That's a good idea. Put them on the wiki.
Okay, let's thank Andy.